today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Oakland Airport loses a round in court, and the Las Vegas monorail lives to travel for another year and maybe more.
In our Smarter Traveler update at 11:25, we share some hotel room and elevator safety tips that you may not have heard of before.
At 11:35, we share a women's travel update. Some tour operators, realizing women make up 75% of their market, are offering women-only tours. And we take a closer look at the impact Taylor Swift is having. Dollar-wise, it's huge, on the travel industry.
We wrap up with odds and ends at 11:50, telling you what travel alert levels for cruise ports of call means, and how a new California law on pricing is rippling not only throughout travel, but other industries as well.
An hour packed with tips to make you a smarter and better informed traveler. Welcome to the Travel Guys.
Welcome everyone to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. Thanks for coming along. Don't forget now links to our special guests on the program and all the stuff you need to make you a smarter traveler can be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. I'm Tom Romano, right here in my little home studio, while Mark Hoffman, our travel super expert, is far away there in Huntsville, Alabama. Mark, how's the weather?
Yeah, well, the weather in Huntsville today is really nice. This is kind of a cool place. I have flown out of the Huntsville airport before, but I've never been in downtown Huntsville. And they're doing a remarkable job of redoing their inner downtown core here, building hotels around their convention center, and also what looks like a phenomenal idea. There are a number of large buildings here going up around the downtown core that are going to provide residential housing. And This is not a huge city. I don't think it has quite the housing shortage that we do in some California cities, but it strikes me that we have all these state workers who work downtown. And if that's where they're going to work in the future, why don't we have more housing downtown? If we did, I mean, let's face it, we've got things that could be replaced and housing could be put there and a lot of people could live downtown. It would solve traffic problems and there's some great restaurants downtown. We've got theaters and it's just something that it's like, wow, I wonder why we don't do something like this. This is really a pretty little city. I'm glad I'm not here in July or August because it gets a little humid here. But pretty city, nice place. I am here for the National – I'm sorry. I'm here for the National Tour Association Convention. This is where
– I was going to say that's where all the movers and shakers in the travel industry go. And, in fact, give us a little overview as to what information you bring home from this that helps your sports leisure travelers when you put together trips and such. How does this help?
Well, once a year we gather at this convention, and what happens is, besides some educational processes and, of course, sightseeing in the area that you're visiting, you get an opportunity to have short appointments with destinations and people who represent hotels and restaurants and attractions and the like, and they can pitch their product to you and give you an opportunity to ask questions and get ideas for places to add to future tours or future tours to create. Or in some limited cases, you find out more about a destination and you say, well, you know, maybe that doesn't need to be as high on my list as I thought so. So it's a great opportunity to find out about product in person from people and also to interact with other tour operators and the like who, you know, guys and ladies who make widgets get together and talk to other widget operators because that way they find out better ways to make and sell widgets. And so that's what we do with tours here in Huntsville this week.
Very cool. All right. Well, we got lots to cover. So from Huntsville, Alabama, let's get to it. At the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on the travel news. And with it, here's Mark.
A couple of months ago, we talked about the fact that the Oakland Airport had decided to change their name. And they wanted to be the San Francisco Bay Oakland International Airport. Of course, the Oakland Airport, if you're familiar, does sit on the other side of San Francisco Bay, virtually almost across from San Francisco International. The judge, however, has decided that, of course, the San Francisco airport wasn't real thrilled about that change, and a federal judge has granted San Francisco's motion for a preliminary injunction against Oakland. Means the Port of Oakland will need to immediately stop using the name San Francisco Bay Oakland International Airport and not use San Francisco Bay in any promotions or products. This seems really weird because it strikes me that if they had come up with the name Oakland San Francisco Bay International Airport, it probably would have been fine. But the fact that they put the Oakland all the way to the fourth word and put San Francisco up front is probably, what an interesting little spitting match, huh? Back and forth across the bay.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that that's even going on, but, you know, what was Oakland thinking? I don't know. It's always concerning when someone's trying to profit, benefit from the popularity of something that isn't yours.
Well, in Oakland, of course, you know, we those of us who live in Northern California, we know that Oakland carries a little bit of a reputation that San Francisco is trying to catch up to, but Oakland's airport has always been, they've been known for less expensive fares. Southwest Airlines, that was one of the big places that Southwest landed in Northern California to start with, and absolutely changed airfares out of the San Francisco Bay Area. But also the airport over there in Oakland is in a kind of a not so great neighborhood. And so people are a little nervous sometimes about traveling to there. Of course, those of us in Sacramento, we've got Southwest flights here galore, and we don't need. But there were times many years ago when people from Sacramento traveled to Oakland to get a much better fare out of Oakland, or to get a nonstop flight that they couldn't get out of Sacramento. Anyways, no more using the name San Francisco for the Oakland airport. Surely they could have come up with something a little bit more creative that would have passed muster. The Las Vegas Monorail has been in operation now for 20 years. It makes seven stops along the strip there. It's a 3.9-mile route. For about 2 years, Las Vegas officials have been saying that the monorail eventually would be decommissioned because they've been having a hard time getting insurance for the folks who ride it, liability insurance. But they've solved that problem, committed some money to fixing up the monorail, and now they say that the monorail could be around for another decade or so, that it is an effective way to get people up and down the strip. Those big casino hotels in Las Vegas are not, they're next door to each other, but there are pretty large parking lots in between.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
This is something that I think the monorail also, don't you think you're a Las Vegas guy, Tom, don't you think the monorail is kind of a little bit of a signature thing there?
Absolutely. I love the monorail. I don't know how the city could survive without it. It would be kind of tough. And I think it's worth the investment and the time that they put. And I think it's probably going to continue to rise. I just wish that they had a way to have the monorail take you from Old Vegas, Fremont Street, down to the main strip as well, which would be a sweet deal. Otherwise, it's a taxi or Uber City. But yeah,
Are you a guy who likes when you go to Vegas? Do you like the atmosphere and the feeling of being down on Fremont Street and the as opposed to being out on the strip?
I do. I like both, but I'm mostly fond of the Fremont Street because it's self-contained. It's just got a vibe all its own. 24/7. You got to be ready for loudness, though. Because on Fremont Street, that's covered with the flashing lights and the music and so forth, especially in the evening time, you know, you think the casinos are loud. You just step out onto Fremont Street and it's twice as loud. But
yeah.
I like that kind of stuff. You give me all the flashing lights and the loud music and I'm in my happy place.
If you're a person who likes to ride Amtrak, Amtrak has a winter sale going on right now, 40% off of train fares. If you're going to travel between December 7th and March the 15th, there are some blackouts around Christmas and Thanksgiving. But if you're an Amtrak traveler, an opportunity to snag a ticket at a great fare. And also, you know, the scenery from Amtrak trains like the Zephyr through the Rockies in the wintertime, my goodness, I would recommend that. Cities are having some challenges with their convention centers. says Mark, as he's in a city for a convention. Convention centers have had a decline in attendance, and companies are spending less on conferences, so fewer people are going to attend conferences, which means fewer conferences. Of course, these convention centers in cities are huge economic drivers because they fill a large convention. This group that I'm with here today will probably be about 1,500 people. We're here for 4 or 5 days, most of us. Most of us are not sharing a room with somebody. So I'm guessing 1,000, 1,200 rooms a night just for this smallish National Tour Association convention here in Huntsville. So you can imagine what big business convention centers mean. And if fewer people are going to conventions, it also mean and fewer companies are booking convention centers, then that becomes not only a drag on the finances of the convention center, but a drag on the hotels and the restaurants and the like that are around that. So something to keep an eye on. This may be a societal shift that may show the end for convention. Can you imagine, Tom? More and more conventions are being held remotely, where people just dial up and get online and do their thing for a day or two and never have to leave town.
Yeah, that's that. First of all, that's no fun. And I don't think that's good business. People need to do business face to face with people and show their wares. I hope that it doesn't go that direction.
In my industry, the travel industry, we're a people industry. So the non-in-person thing doesn't really work. We're about people. So I want to meet you, and I want you to tell me what your hotel is like, and I want to be able to ask you questions, and I want to see the reaction on your face, and I want to know what you know. I don't want to hear see an email or something that maybe you didn't even write, increasingly. So anyways, that's just my own feelings on the thing. Southwest Airlines, here's something kind of interesting. Boeing had a big strike. It basically cut off new airplane deliveries. They dropped by about 80% over a period of several months. So this means that airlines like Southwest did not get planes delivered that they planned to have delivered and that they already had schedules written for and that they already had staff for. So Southwest is offering voluntary separation packages to staffs at 18 airports due to aircraft delivery delays. And now that I read this, I wonder if Sacramento is one of those 18. I don't have that answer, but I'll try to find out next week. The separation program is available to all types of employees, customer service, cargo, ramp agents, including some supervisors. So they're just trying to – we didn't get the planes, so we don't need people to staff them. Speaking of planes that don't need to be staffed, we've talked for a number of weeks about Spirit Airlines perhaps approaching bankruptcy. Had a friend sent me an email last week, and he said, "Hey, Spirit Airlines stock is down to $1.11. He said, "I can't imagine that wouldn't be a good buy at that point." And I quickly wrote him back and said, "I wouldn't get anywhere near that. I wouldn't spend $1.11 for one share." Here's what's going to happen with Spirit. They're moving forward to the bankruptcy filing, and part of the bankruptcy filing is going to wipe out any equity. So the creditors are going to get what money is there, and the stockholders are going to probably get nothing. The shares are down very close to zero already. So if you're I'm not an expert in the stock market, but be careful. Spirit Airlines shares are likely to be worth nothing as early as next week. This is moving fairly quickly. Hyatt Place is one of those hotel chains. Now, this is Hyatt Place. They have regular Hyatts, Hyatt Regencies, Hyatt Houses. Hyatt Place is in trials to cut free breakfast in their United States properties. I don't know about you, Tom. I a lot of these hotels, Hampton Inns, Drury Inns, which is a Midwestern chain, a lot of hotels have gone to these free included breakfasts in the mornings, which really are second or third rate in most cases, don't really offer good quality or nutritional options to people. Hyatt Place has decided that maybe they can do without that, and so they've cut that out on a trial basis in some places. I guess it provides value for people, and if you're traveling on a budget, it's probably a good thing. But I haven't had an included breakfast in a hotel. I mean, one of those expanded continental breakfasts in a long time that I would ever want to have again. So,
well, you know, here's the bottom line is if you're traveling with kids and you're in a resort area where you're going going to theme parks and so forth, you want to be able to take care of that, of at least the first meal of the day right there in your hotel. You know, something semi-substantial before you hit the road. Otherwise, you got to go find another location to eat because you're not going to be eating and cooking in your room. So I think they serve a real purpose. But you'll probably find that you'll only get that kind of a meal and service at an area that is in fact near theme parks and around areas like that where families gather, and us that don't, then you know you're on your own.
Good point. I'm a business traveler and oftentimes on my own, and also I'm a guy who, you know, I'm a quality guy. You know, I'd rather pay $5 for something that's of good quality than $3 for something that isn't. So, but you make a very valid point. If you're on any kind of a budget, or if you're traveling with family, kids probably just go wild in places like that, which is one reason that I don't particularly care for them.
exactly.
And finally, one last story here. We talked about the possibility of airlines and travelers getting together and using Apple AirTags to track lost bags. And indeed, it looks like that's going to happen. Apple is going to work with airlines that are interested to try to create a system where they will be able to activate. You could tell Apple, here, you can share my location of where this bag is on my machine so that you can find it for me and get it back to me. And then after you're done, you can kick that out and I can, you know, have my privacy back. So if I wish to help you find my bag, I can do it, because a lot of people are in that position now. So it's going to be a little while to come, but it looks like initial airlines are Air Canada, Air New Zealand, British Airways, Delta, KLM, Lufthansa. It's a pretty impressive list. United. I don't see American on here or Southwest. But anyways, another way to find a lost bag. And that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. Check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. Let's talk catering. Did you know that Rudy's also has a catering department that can serve you up to anything you want? Hamburgers and hot dogs all the way to filet mignon and lobster. Great taste of Rudy's can show up right at your doorstep, or better, at your office for your holiday party. They can bring the truck there. Rudy's on the roll. Park in the driveway and party time. Their food truck specializes in, if you haven't had it, lobster rolls and filet mignon tacos. And if you dine in at Rudy's anytime you want, just ask for the 6-ounce lobster tail Travel Guys special for only $29.95. Our favorite hangout, Rudy's Hideaway. You call them at 916-351-0606 for the catering. And don't forget, they're right off Highway 50 at Hazel. Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House. Live and in living radio, locally sourced, it's Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys. Again, visit us at TravelGuysRadio.com. Okay, Mark, let's make people safer travelers, if you will. You've got some great tips on hotel rooms and elevator safety, so let's get to it.
Yeah, I watched part of this play out a couple of days ago in a hotel, and it reminded me that this might be something that would be of real help to a lot of people, especially ladies who travel by themselves for business, or find themselves on the road by themselves. You're in a hotel and you push the button for the elevator. You're getting ready to go up to your room. In the elevator, let's say in this case there's a single person in the elevator, a man. And when the elevator arrives on the ground floor, the passenger doesn't get out. And so the passenger doesn't get out, and now it's the option for the person to get into. You're standing there waiting to get into the elevator, and somebody's already in the elevator. There's no floor button pushed. So, I mean, you know, somebody gets in an elevator, it's going the wrong direction, they ride down to the ground, and then they ride back up. But they would push a button so the elevator would take them to the floor they're going to. But in this case, you're getting into an elevator with somebody already in it that's come to the ground floor, which logically is where everyone gets off. This person doesn't get off, and you get into the elevator, and they haven't pushed a button. So now you're going to push your button, and you're going to tell them where you're going because you pushed the button. Here's the safety recommendation. This situation occurs to you. A button, the elevator arrives on the ground floor. Somebody doesn't get out. You get into the elevator, and you notice this situation. What you immediately say is, can I push a button? Can I enter your floor for you? If the person doesn't immediately say, oh, yes, I'm sorry, I'm third floor, or they stand there and they're kind of hesitant to tell you, or they can't make up their mind, the very best thing that you can do is leave the elevator immediately. If you go up in your elevator, let's pretend for a minute that you get in and this is a situation, you enter fifth floor and the other person is going to the seventh floor. You get to the fifth floor, the door opens and you get off, and that person follows you off the elevator, not acknowledging that they were supposed to be getting off on a different floor. So at that point, pick up the security phone if there's one, get off the elevator. If you can get back in, that's great. Just say something like, oh my goodness, I've forgotten something downstairs. Just get back in, push the ground floor. Or another option is if there's a security phone by the elevator, pick up the phone, tell the front desk, I'm a little concerned. I'm on the fifth floor landing. I'm on my way back down to the front desk right now. So you've alerted them without causing a major scene. So just be careful when you're getting elevators into elevators in hotels. Be on the lookout for people who might be in the elevator and not have indicated exactly what their intentions are.
Good, good tip. Everybody has been in that situation. Ladies, pay attention. All right, Mark, let's get to it here. We're going to talk a little bit about women's travel. And I think people have realized for quite some time that women make a lot of the travel decisions. In our headlines, we said that women, 75% of the market, offering tours to women only tours. You take women a lot of places, but your trips are never women only, are they?
No, they're really not, although, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, a huge percentage of the people who take package travel are women. Also, a unique demographic shift has occurred here in the last 30, 40 years. Women didn't travel alone very often. When I first went into business back in the late 70s, early 80s, if they did, they stayed reasonably close to home. Of course, women statistically outlive men by about 7 years on the average. So it stands to reason that there would be many older women in better health who would be able to travel, who maybe had lost their spouses and still had travel dreams and had the money to be able to go. And if they could go safely and securely, why, then they would be willing to do so. And that's exactly what's happened over the years as women have turned a lot to package travel. That's what we call what tour operators put together, because generally it's a hotel and attractions and perhaps it's everything, or perhaps you've bought part of a package that makes it a little easier when you get to your destination. In my case, you are picked up at your home, you get on an airplane, perhaps on a motor coach, you go someplace, you visit restaurants and attractions and on a pre-planned itinerary, sometimes with some free time on your own, like our New York trips, and then you, and basically, you're traveling with women. I'm a tour operator, that my clientele are mostly mature travelers, and I would tell you that on the average, on a 25-passenger tour, there are 20 women and 5 men, unless it happens to be a trip to spring training or something like that, in which case it might be closer to 50-50. Still a surprising number of female travelers. And so our company, oh gosh, we've been in business 46 years now, so 25 or so years ago, we thought about the fact that, gosh, most of our clientele are women. Why are we creating itineraries for men? Why not create itineraries that have more female-oriented things that women would like as opposed to things for men? So long time ago, this Sacramento company acknowledged that women not only were big travelers, but they made a bunch of the travel decisions, and about 80% of them in couples over 50, the woman decides where the vacationer is going to go, and the man says, yeah, I'm in, or better yet, you go and have a great time with your friends or whatever, and I'll stay here and hold down the fort. So women traveling has become a really, really big business, and increasingly, tour operators have suddenly, it appears, started realizing this. So many companies now are offering women-only tours, which I find kind of interesting, and I read and said to my staff, gee, you know, maybe we should consider women-only tours, and my staff responded with the answer of, gee, our tours are sort of women-only already. So I don't know that we need to make any sort of a shift there. Why would we want to tell the men that we don't want them? So anyhow, and the men who go on tours on our trips, single men or men who go with their wives or with their partners, generally we don't get into a situation where there's any difficult social situations or stuff like that. In fact, I will tell you that some women have met their second, third, whatever husband on when they're out traveling, because you're finding people with common interests. Does any of that make sense?
It sure does, and I was just thinking, you know, that 20 ladies and five guys. Come on, guys, if you're thinking of meeting a nice lady that may be single, and you're thinking of having a companion in the future, signing up as a single guy on one of Mark's trips with 20 ladies, you know, could put you in a pretty good position. you just indicated that there have been relationships that have been sparked through sports leisure travel.
Oh, lots of them, and even more importantly, from a single woman's point of view, when you travel on another trip with a lot of single women, whether it's a trip that's been designated women only, or you just, as in the case with my company, where the clientele are predominantly women, it's very easy to find somebody to travel with in the future. So that you're not only, I mean, we have lots and lots and lots of people who travel with our company who met somebody on the road who has become their traveling companion. Sometimes they share buddies. A hotel room, which of course makes it a little cheaper to travel. Sometimes they have their own hotel rooms and own accommodations. They just share meals together. They sit together on the motor coach, perhaps, kind of gives you somebody to hang with, without a 24/7 commitment. So that's travel is a good place to meet people. And as these tour operators are realizing now, catering to the female traveler is something that is not only becoming more and more popular, but from a financial standpoint, they're picking up on the fact that mature travelers, by and large, are female. So,
you know,
good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to chime in. I have a good friend, a chiropractor, and I didn't know this at the time, but, after several visits and we get to chatting about what I do and so forth, and she pointed out that her and her mom traveled with sports leisure on a few trips over the years. And so mother-daughter travel. Especially when they both get up, and you know, you got a 50-year-old daughter and a 75-year-old mother, they love to travel together. So those are great combinations too.
And some of the larger companies have not gotten on board with this yet. Globus, Cosmos, and Tauk Tours are two large tour companies that have not done this. But even their spokespeople for this article that I'm quoting here from Travel Weekly is they're both saying that that female travelers are a prime consideration when they're developing itineraries, and the safety and security of female travelers are right at the top of their list of concerns. So it's obvious that this is not a new thing. So let's shift gears here just for a second from women travelers to women making people into travel. We've mentioned on this before that Taylor Swift's moving around the country and then the planet, and now she's back to moving around the country again as her world tour comes to a conclusion, has had incredible economic impacts. Now, it's easy for people who are listening to say, well, of course, you know, the ticket's $250. Try to buy one for less than $1,500 online. Yes, that's one obvious situation that exists, is that tickets are expensive and they're hard to come by. But hotel rooms are also hard to come by. In New Orleans, when Taylor Swift was there, over the four-day period, 2 days before her concert and 2 days after, the hotel RevPAR, which is an industry word for the average RevPAR, that's how much money are we getting out of a room on the average per night. So during the most recent Super Bowl in New Orleans and during the most recent Taylor Swift concerts, the RevPAR for hotels heavily, heavily accelerated, hotel rates much higher, but they were very similar. In other words, Taylor Swift coming to town was on the same level as the Super Bowl coming to town. The prices that hotels, and I'm guessing restaurants, were able to get for their services was much accelerated, and accelerated to approximately the same level. Another hotelier said, as Taylor Swift went around Europe, of course, which doesn't have a Super Bowl like we do, he said she created many Super Bowls, many M-I-N-I Super Bowls, all over the continent. Because he said, just look at these numbers, and some of them are quoted here, that this lady has had more impact financially than any concert group in recorded history. And he was trying to do a little bit of legwork and figure out maybe what the Beatles or the Stones might have moved in terms of economic numbers when they were quite popular, and make some kind of 40, 50 years ago comparison. And he said, in his opinion, when he went back and looked at records and the like, of course, you know, hotel rooms that are $200 now and turned into $500 hotel rooms for Ms. Swift were $35 hotel rooms back when the Beatles were in business and perhaps turned into $200 hotel rooms. But he said that this is unprecedented, that there is no entertainer in the history of the planet who has been able to command these kinds of ticket prices and these kinds of adjacent prices and has had this type of impact. And remember, when people are paying a lot of money for hotel rooms and stuff, they're tipping, they're probably throwing more money around. So everybody in the local economy, from servers in restaurants to bellmen at hotels to Uber drivers, are probably making a little more money than they're used to. So just kind of an interesting, I found to be a really interesting economic fact.
Wow, that's crazy. You know, I saw Taylor Swift. And
really?
it hardly cost me anything. Taylor Swift was the opening act, and there were two or three others that opened for Brad Paisley out there in Marysville at the amphitheater. And Taylor Swift was barely out of high school with her little acoustic guitar and a little farm dress. He got out there and sang her five or six, you know, little pop song, country pop songs that she did at the time. And I have to say, I knew right then and there that this would eventually be her, she would be this big. Not.
Really?
I did not comprehend that she would ever be the rock star, if you will, that she's become. First of all, I figured that country would be her niche. She would be popular. But nobody guessed this. And you have to talk to the Swifties, and you have to really understand her popularity. A lot of it doesn't have to do with how she sounds and how she sings, but what she has to say. And now it's become what she represents to young America and young people all over the world. She could be president if she wanted to.
Yeah, well, she is certainly moving a lot of economic dollars. I'm guessing there are people now sitting around all over the place saying, geez, the next time this lady goes on tour, she has to come to our city, and how do we make that happen? Hey, one more quick little thing I wanted to throw in before we go to the break here. You know, our show is by and large heard around Sacramento, is my guess. I mean, we have thousands of people who listen to it live every Saturday, and an increasingly large number of people who listen to it by podcast. But I got an interesting email to the Travel Guys website last week that I would love to share. Hi, guys. Really enjoy listening to your weekly podcast. The information is useful, although I don't live anywhere near Sacramento. I question your strategy of buying an economy ticket, even though that fare is full. I think people that have higher status will get bumped towards the priority end of the pointy end, the first class into the plane first. Anyway, he talks a little bit about the story we talked about, suggesting to people that if you buy in a cheap economy ticket and there are no cheap economy seats, not to worry about it because the airline will have to perhaps give you an upgraded ticket. Anyways, he said, great show. Thanks for what you do. Really enjoy listening every week. Will Rabber. Will is in Summerdale, Alabama. And here I am in Alabama. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Every once in a while, I got one from a guy in Poland a few weeks ago who offered some travel tips for Poland that I think I'm going to work into an Eastern European travel segment somewhere down the road. So thank you, Will, for writing. And those of you who are listening outside the Sacramento area, if you ever have a comment or a thought or something to share about the Travel Guys radio show that you think might be useful to our listeners at travelguysradio.com, you are welcome to leave us a note.
Amen to that. All right, we're going to wrap things up with our odds and ends segment, tell you what travel alert levels of cruise ports of call mean. I think you'll enjoy that. Also about a California law on pricing that not only is affecting us here in California in travel, but other industries as well, not just in California, too. Tell me a little bit about this cruise ports of call alert.
Okay. Government levels. Changed the travel warning for three ports of call this week, which... and two of them went down and one went up. And so I thought that this not only what ports were being changed, but what the ratings mean and could mean to travelers, and why, if you're going on a cruise, you should make it a habit of going online. And before you book your cruise, you should check out the ports of call that you're making. The State Department rates every port of call in an international country on a level of 1 to 4 levels, and they call them levels 1 to 4. Level 1 is exercise normal precautions. In other words, there's some risk in any international travel because of language differences and the like. Level 1 is, just watch out for pickpockets is basically level 1. Level 2 is exercise increased caution. Be aware of heightened risks to safety and security. The State Department of State provides more advice for travelers to these areas in the travel advisory that they issue for the particular port of call. So level 2 is something that, you probably want to go to the Department of State's website and see what they have to say. Level 3 is reconsider travel. Reconsider travel due to serious risks to safety and security. The Department of State provides additional advice again for those places on their website. But if you see a level 3, then you've got to be thinking, that's probably not a place that you want to take the family and kids. Level 4 is do not travel, the highest advisory level due to greater likelihood of life-threatening risks. The U.S. government may have very limited ability to provide assistance, including during an emergency. This also includes places that have a high risk of kidnapping, which means, ransom for U.S. citizens and the like. So you want to be careful, and you want to go on the website, on the State Department's website, and make sure that the places that you are going are not listed in those higher levels before you take off. That makes sense?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so, Mark. In fact, while we're on the subject, we've talked about it before. There is a government site where you can go and register if you're leaving and going to be out of the country for any length of time. Should we remind people about that?
We could, but I don't remember what the website is. So, do you remember that, Thomas?
No, I don't. But we'll look it up and share it with our audience in a future program.
I will answer your question next week.
All right, and these alert levels are pretty critical. I mean, it's a little scary to think that you might travel someplace and be kidnapped for ransom. Of course, I'm concerned that if I got kidnapped, nobody would be willing to pay any ransom, and there I'd be.
or Stephanie Romano might be willing to pay a ransom.
You got him. You keep him.
Yeah. So anyway, the bottom line to that, be a smarter traveler. When you're thinking about making a cruise to some place, to some exotic land, go online, Department of State website, check out how they rate what their level of risk is for the cruise, for the ports of call that that cruise is going to. All right, one more thing here to maybe to make you a little bit smarter traveler before you head out on the road on your next trip. We've talked a lot about drip pricing and junk fees, and of course, our current president said he was going to get rid of some of these things, and we sat around for 3 years and watched pretty much nothing happen, but some things have happened now. Chris Elliott has told us that some of these things might get undone when the new administration comes in, but for right now, a new California law on drip pricing was passed. It went into effect the 1st of July. It wasn't particularly for the travel industry. It just meant that if you looked at something online or you went into a store and you saw a printed price for something, it had to include anything that you had to, that you were forced to purchase in order to have that product. So if there was a resort fee for a hotel or any kind of a hidden tax or anything that wasn't government mandated, you had to disclose that. It had to be listed in the price, the first full price page that showed the price of your hotel or your attraction or whatever it was, so that people could make an informed decision. And so what has happened is that, again, this wasn't intended specifically for the travel industry, but that was a target. But other industries, the rule is if you advertise online, and realistically, California people are exposed. If you market your product to people from California, if you're in Indiana and you've got an online store and you market to people from California, then you have to follow this law. Never mind the fact that most of your customers may come from other states. So what is happening is that if you go online, you'll see this. More and more industries are doing upfront pricing. We're not seeing this drip pricing or junk fees. They're putting it all, especially the travel sites, are putting it all on the first page. So for all the people in the other 49 states, congratulations. Because in this case, California got its act together and you are benefiting.
Well, there you go. That's nothing but good news. It just goes to show that, you know, we have more than sunshine and great food. Before we completely wrap
up,
before we wrap up real quick, just wanted to make sure that we thank Justine, who has been our board op producer here for the Travel Guys for the last year or so. As always, Mark, the good ones eventually go off to do better things. So this will be more than likely Justine's last shot. If those listen for a long time, have heard us say goodbye to a lot of great ones. So thanks, Justine. Mark, your final comment there.
We train them in the minor leagues here on the weekends, and then they go off to the majors and to the show. So that's what's happening. Congratulations to Justine. Thank you all for the pleasure of your time and your company this morning. In the meantime, dance like nobody's watching.
Stay well, my friends. See you next week.